Okay, so we have come to the next part of the mindfulness for Yangada session. That is a discussion on Kasid Bharadwaja Sutta. Actually, last time also we discussed to some extent, and we can actually complete it today. And as you can remember, probably Kasid Bharadwaja is a Brahmin who was involved with ploughing, paddy farming, and he's a very rich person. And there is a kind of a customary activity that he is going through, kind of a festival time in order to start plowing. So there are 500 other farmers who are working under him, and it's a kind of a festival. So he was trying to start his farming. Probably you can remember that during the Buddha's time, even as the young Prince Siddhartha, who also participated in King Suddhodana's kind of plowing ceremony. So this is a kind of a ceremonial activity when they are starting the what we call the Vapmagul, the ceremonial starting of this cultivation. And similarly here also this Kasid Bharadwaja, being the head farmer, started that activity. So the first day, so he's sharing some food among the Brahmins, among his co-workers. And now Buddha understood this person actually is a very wise person, and he has the potential to become an arahant, even though currently he is farming. Now Buddha understood his potential, actually he recognized that. And now Buddha also attend that food festival. Now, during the farming ceremony, now this Kasid Bharadwaja is offering food to other fellow beings who are the supporters, and Buddha also approached there. Now, it is quite interesting. Now, Buddha is not his fellow farmer, and this Kasid Bharadwaja also not seems much familiar with this kind of donations. But anyway, out of compassion, Buddha approached there, and he also stands there expecting some food. And after seeing Buddha, so this Brahmin is mentioning that I am eating after plowing and sowing. Why don't you also plow and sow? It's a kind of a hint in a way, because he has seen these kind of summoners, ascetics, who simply beg food from others. So without doing farming or any other another activity, another remuneration. So others have to support them. So probably this farmer is now hinting that why don't you do the same thing as I am doing. You have to spend some time in your occupation rather than coming and asking food from me. Now then interestingly Buddha replied the same tone. He said that I am also farming and I am also plowing and sowing I also do. So this is a way Buddha tackled the situation. And after that, now a kind of an interesting discussion starts. And here Kasid Bharadwaja is now asking, we can't see your equipment. Now if someone is farming, now there are various equipments going to be used, but we can't see your equipments. And then Buddha reply using various verses. So those are very interesting, has some aesthetic value. And Buddha mentioned, Saddha bijang tapo vutti, panya me yuga nangalang, hiri isa mano yottang, sati me phala pachanam. Now this is very interesting similes that Buddha is using. Saddha bijang. So in my type of farming, saddha, the faith, is the seed. And panya e yuga nangalang. So panya, the wisdom, appear as the yoke and plow. And shame is my pole, mine my yoke tie, mindfulness my plowshare and god. Now this is the traditional old farming, and I was able to find this interesting picture in a website. So they are also explaining this sutta, and there you can see how these different terminologies that Buddha using effectively to pass the message. Now, yoke and plow appear as the wisdom, and then goad and plowshare appear as the mindfulness, and the field is the mind, and faith is the seed, and austerity, maybe we can say the restrainment, the morality, so that appear as the rain. And now I am continuing this kind of farming, and the fruit is the Nibbana, the deathless. Now that is the fruit. Now interestingly, Buddha very tactfully approached the situation so that the other person may understand this terminology. So if Buddha preached immediately, say Vulnerable Truth Source, that kind of a fairly advanced thing, so this person doubtful that understanding it. But when Buddha relate from his own language, what is familiar to him, then it is most probably he is in a position to understand. Now, after mentioning this, so we can see that Saddha is taken a very prominent point here. Now, that is something I like to highlight. So there's a kind of a stock phrase again and again appear in certain suttas. So why this kind of saddha, the faith is quite important. So what I have highlighted here, saddha jato upasankamati upasankamanto pairupasati. So likewise, a kind of a series of events going to happen when faith is available. Say you start having faith on a particular teacher, you start having faith on a particular dhamma, some teaching, then you approach that particular person. You approach that teacher, and after going there, then you start sort of associating that person. And once you associate him, now you are lending your ears. Now you start hearing him, and you lend an ear when you are attending. Now you are asking various questions, and you are closely listening to that. And sotang odahati, ohita soto dhammang sunati. Now you are with lot of attention, you are now listening to what he is talking. He may be preaching dhamma, he may be talking on a particular subject, some interesting topic about dhamma. So you are also interested. So you are listening to that attentively. Dhammang sunati, sutta dhammang dhareti. Now, so what you have heard, you are trying to remember. So you have heard something and you are not forgetting it, but you are interested about it, and now you are remembering it. Dhammang dathanang dhammanang attang upaparikkhati. Now once you have remembered what you have remembered, now you do some further close analysis. Now this is actually the chintame panya. Probably you can remember we were discussing three types of panya: the sutameya panya, chintameya panya, and the bhavanameya panya. Sutameya panya is what we just covered, that you approach a particular teacher, approach a particular person, and then you start associating him. Now you lend your ear and you start listening to his dhamma. Now that is the sutameya. You gather some information, you start listening to dhamma from a teacher. Now after that, what you have heard, you are now trying to remember, and you do your own reflection. Is it going to happen? Is it true? Is it proper? Is it righteous? So likewise, you do your own reflection, and that is the chintame prajna. Tathanang dhammanang attang upaparikkhati. Attang upaparikkhato dhamma nijjanang kamanti. Now you come to a kind of a conclusion, okay, it is true. You accept what you have heard, because you do some proper analysis, proper reflection, and as a result of that, so you accept it is kind of true dhamma. And after accepting that, ධම්මා නිජ්ජානක්ඛන්තියා සති ඡන්தோ ජායති. Now you have an intention to practice. A little bit of desire is there for you to put it into practice. Chanda jato usahati. Now you have to put effort. I mean, you can't immediately do it because you feel a little drowsy, you feel lazy, you can't wake up early. There are a lot of duties, you are quite busy. So you need a lot of effort. Chanda jato usahati. So this usahati, that you have to arouse some energy. To find time, to find a proper place, and to find out a proper time, even your timetable. Ussahetva tulayati. Now you do kind of a balancing of it. So this is the proper time to do. This is the proper way to do. And who else are doing? So you do kind of a further. Assessment about the situation. And you start now the situation, you start the practice. So while practicing, you do kind of an assessment, introspection, time to time, am I doing properly? Is it the mindfulness developing now? So this assessment is quite important. So time to time, you do this assessment, tulayati. Tulayitva padahati. Now, as a result of that, so, while based on that assessment, you further strive. Assume that you found, okay, now I don't have enough samadhi. Now you need to strive to develop samadhi. And you understood, okay, still I don't have powerful mindfulness, enough mindfulness. So you need to strive in order to develop further mindfulness. So you understood, okay, I need to develop wisdom. So you need to strive for that. You need to work hard. You have to diligently practice. Now you are quite determined to do it. Pahitatto samanu kāyena ceva paramasacchaṁ sacchi karoti. Now, as a result of your, say, dedicated practice, and now you are able to understand the truth. Even within the body, you feel it. It's quite evident to you. It is not a kind of a belief that you had in the early stage. So that particular teacher to that person and to what he is talking, to his teaching, you had kind of a faith at the beginning. But now it is not a faith, but rather it is your own experience. So you have experienced what he has taught. So that's the difference between the Buddha's teaching and some other teachings. The Buddha's teaching you can verify like this. At the beginning you have to trust the Buddha. You have to have some faith on him. You have to have some faith on Dhamma. And you got to believe. Still you are not sure about it. But you believe, you trust. And then you start really practicing. And then only you slowly recognize, okay, these are possible. These are achievable. And it's a matter of continuing your training, practice. Now you slowly develop that confidence. And as you are continuing the practice, so the wisdom also develops, fair understanding also coming. And as a result of that, now you even feel through your body some kind of clarity, some kind of calmness, some kind of peacefulness available to yourself. Now you are experiencing that kind of a peacefulness in your body and mind. Panyayachanam ativijya passati. Now, having pierced it with wisdom, he sees. Now with the wisdom, you can penetrate to the reality. So you understand, okay, this is the true nature. This is how things are working. This is the, say, causality. This is how mind is working. This is how they are interdependent. So it's kind of you are piercing through wisdom. All the different situation, now you have that sharp wisdom, the necessary faculties, qualities, and through that, you are able to recognize some deep understanding. The insights are available. So therefore, having faith at the beginning is very, very important. So having some kind of a faith. So still I am not sure, still you are not sure whether I am going to successful or is it true, or I still might have little doubts, but still having some kind of a faith so that I am approaching the teacher, listening to him, lending my ears, listening to him, trying to understand what he is talking and maybe memorizing it on the way back, reflecting on what he has mentioned. Now you understood, okay, it is true, it may be true, yes, yes, let me try that, let me put it into practice. Now you are putting yourself into practice. For that you need a lot of energy, because there's a huge hindrances, the power of hindrance is pretty high, so you have to put a lot of effort to overcome that. Anyway, you started the practice, so that is very important. So you are now putting your own practice. You are observing various phenomena, so you are developing mindfulness, concentration, etc. And as a result of that, now you are slowly getting some understanding. So with that understanding, okay, you feel kind of a comfort, kind of a peacefulness. And that Buddha mentioned, kāyena ceva parama sacchaṁ sacchi karoti. Even through the body, you can feel that. The reality, what you understood, even you feel kind of a relaxation in the body. Previously, there are kind of tightness, tensions, say stiffness, stresses, various kind of despair, worries that you have gone through. But now body also relax, calm, and less jerks. Mind also calm, relaxed, peaceful. So you recognize these kind of improvements happen both in the body and the mind. And now that wisdom you are using further and further to understand different phenomena, what are, how this mind is working, what are the constructions happening within ourselves, so why we get on into various troubles unnecessarily through the mind, so why we go through a lot of suffering, what are the causes. So likewise, you are penetrating deep truths through this particular wisdom. So faith, therefore, quite necessary, important. And in this sutta, Buddha therefore consider it as the seed. So without the seed, you can't have a harvest. Seed is extremely important. So now the conversation going on with Buddha and the Kasi Bharadvaja, and after Buddha explained Dhamma to this Kasi Bharadvaja, he was quite happy. So he understood, okay, there is some interesting way that Buddha has put it, which he can easily understand. He was able to properly relate Dhamma to his own experiences. Now he realized, okay, I better give some offering to this ascetic, give some offering to this teacher, to this Gautama. Now he want to offer some food. He was having some food in his hand, and he was reluctant to offer it, and asking Buddha to work hard to earn money, earn living like him. But now the kind of a conversation was going on. So after the conversation, he was quite realized, or rather say convinced, to offer some food to the Buddha. Now he is inviting Buddha to accept his food. He was holding the food in his hand, milk rice in his hand. Now he is trying to offer food to the Buddha. Now interestingly, Buddha refused it. Now previously Buddha approached in search of food, actually in order to help this person. Now he was keeping his food on his hand without offering it. Now there's a kind of a good conversation going on, and Dhamma preaching has happened. After the Dhamma preaching, now he is going to offer the food. Now Buddha say, I am not going to accept it. This is a kind of a custom about the Buddhas. Gathabhi gītam me abhojaneya sampasantam brahmana nesa dhammo gathabhi gītam panudanti buddha Dhamme sati, Dahmana, Uttiresa. food over which verses have been recited is not to be eaten by me. Now, he was keeping the food without offering it. Then Buddha was preaching Dhamma. Now, it is very much like, because for this sermon, for this preaching, he is trying to offer food. Very much like that. So, the Buddha says, I am not going to accept that. Very much like, this food is now going to be given for what I have uttered, what I have preached. The Buddhas reject food over which verses have been recited. And there being such a principle, Brahmin, this is their conduct. And so Buddha say, I am not going to accept it. Now, Kasibaradhaja was a little puzzled. Now, what am I going to do with this food? Now Buddha say, okay, either the Buddha or his disciple is only capable of accepting this food. Now you better put it to a place where living beings are not available. Now Buddha is suggesting you to go, him to go to put it to a water where no living beings are available. So interestingly, Bharadwaja carrying that particular food, milk rice, he went to a particular water, kind of a reservoir or whatever it is, where there are no living beings available, and he is putting that rice into that water. Now all of a sudden, immediately kind of a hissing sound coming from that water, it's like kind of a burning, hissing kind of sound coming from this water. Now Kasi Bharadwaja was surprised. He was astonished by seeing that situation. Now he understood, okay, he was holding this food. Putting that food to water is not a big thing. But here, some interesting situation happened. So Buddha asked particularly to put that food only to a place where there are no beings. Now this person has found such a place and he is putting it, but now a kind of a hissing sound, bursting sound is happening when food is thrown to that particular place. Now he was a little puzzled, surprised, and he actually has developed further faith on the Buddha. And Buddha mentioned, actually, you may have to throw away this particular food, but you can later offer some other food. So, So after seeing all these situations, after the discussion and after went through this experience that offering the food and then rejecting and then he's putting it to water and this hissing sound going to happen. So now a lot of faith has developed within Venerable Kasi, so this Kasi Bharadwaja. Now he is asking to enter the sasana, enter to the monkhood. And Buddha accepted and now he is a monk. And then he asked to go ahead with the high ordination, Upasampada. He received Upasampada, high ordination as well. And after some time, he became an Arahant. Now Buddha has seen this whole picture actually before he approached the situation. That's why he understood, okay, this person is a wise person. Even though right now he is living through farming. So after the preaching, he may realize, okay, there is something deeper into Buddha's teaching and he want to become a monk. Now it has happened, and after the high ordination, he was practicing diligently and he attained Arahantship. Now, in a way, we can understand how important it is having faith. And on the other hand, we can see how Buddha skillfully transmitting the message, transmitting the Dhamma to a person who is not familiar with it at all. So using his own terminologies, using his own language, what is familiar to him. So Buddha uses those terminologies and various equipment or the most familiar things to him, and using which he is transmitting his message. So this is quite interesting. And because of that teaching technique, so the person was well received and the teaching was well received, and he was able to understand Buddha's teaching, and he was quite faithful. Now he want to give up everything and he want to become a monk, practice under the guidance of the Buddha. Now you can see the change which has happened. Previously he couldn't even offer food. He is asking Buddha to start living and then find food. But now he himself become a monk who is going going on alms round. And he himself is a monk now, not going through the farming, but a different kind of farming. What Buddha has preached is now started by this Kasiba Radhwaja as well. And Kasiba Radhwaja, after some time, became an arahant. So there are, you can see some interesting similes and the traditions in that all India, and how Buddha even approach just for one person. So out of compassion, just for this particular person, Buddha reached there, went through a discussion and preached Dhamma, and he was convinced, and then he practiced and ultimately attained arahantship. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now we can start the question and answer session.
Ante, we have six questions today. The first question, it's a Dhamma sermon question. Dear Bhante, regarding last week's Dhamma sermon, Pasibharadwaja Sutta, and the metaphor of the Blessed One, how faith, mindfulness, wisdom, etc. are used together in plowing the field. This indicates that the qualities were developed we develop during our practice, which helps to plow the field, are parts of some resultant, which enables one to experience the fruits of the plowing. What is this grand resultant mechanism, which is enabled by faith, mindfulness, wisdom, etc. Bhante? My little knowledge tells me it seems like understanding one's own mind, different facets of the mind and how it works, which will eventually enable mind to relinquish lobha, dvesha, moha and avijja. Appreciate Bhante's insights. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, true. Actually, as we discussed a little bit in detail today, so these different equipment used in plowing, Buddha metaphorically explained here. Okay, you can plow as the wisdom, say God and plowsha as the mindfulness, and the faith as the seed, restrainment, austerity, that kind of moral aspects as the rain, and shame as the pole, mind as the yoke tie, and ultimately the result. What is the result? The harvest. That is the deathless, the Nibbana. So, I mean, through a simile, Buddha is trying to explain this, and in a way, why Buddha use, say for example, plowshare and God as the mindfulness. Now you see, the God is used to properly navigate the ox, navigate the cow, properly direct him on the proper direction. Now that is very interesting, because you see God in that sense, because otherwise the ox may go in wrong directions, wrong path, where it was already plowed, or to someone else's field. So many problems would be there. But the God helps to properly direct that cow or the ox. So similarly in our mind also, when we are developing this whatever the qualities, so we have to have this God always available. So mindfulness, doing that monitoring activity, always telling us, okay, you do this, you do that. This is good, this is bad, this is wrong, this is right. So that that activity is some one important function of mindfulness. Sati dovariko bhikkave arya savako savajjam pajahati anavajjam bhaveti. So Buddha mentioned mindfulness is very much like a gatekeeper who knows who has to be allowed to go in and who should not be allowed to go in. So that decision is done by the gatekeeper. So he know what exactly to be examined. Similarly, the mindfulness is the one determining, okay, this is these are good things, these are bad things. I better associate, I better not associate. So this is these are the things available right now. Okay, I better improve them, I better reduce them. So likewise, the whole situation is happened under the surveillance, under the supervision of mindfulness. So therefore, Buddha giving or giving mindfulness as the God is important. And not only that, plowshare. So plowshare is here one who actually dig deeply and turn the soil. Now that is also in a way important, because once the mindfulness is well established, so it has the capacity to go deeper. So one aspect of mindfulness is called going deeper aspect. Rather than simply being on the surface, it penetrates. So this penetration is one characteristic of mindfulness. It has that capacity. So with that capacity, now we are investigating. Now you can remember, say, once we establish mindfulness on breathing, so our next duty is to improve this penetrating quality. And it motivates, it initiates wisdom, clear comprehension. The mindfulness is there now, established. Now let us do the cross-examination. Go dive deeply. So that is in a way represented here by the plowshare. It is the one really digging that soil. And how about any other thing? Say wisdom, as yoke and plow. So yoke. So it has to be properly balanced on top of the ox head or the say neck. So it is it's a kind of leading part. So it is in the front. And for that to happen, so you are maintaining through the yoke, you are maintaining the balance. So likewise, we can deeply analyze, as you said, this simile. So why Buddha has given these different skills, why he has represented them metaphorically here. Actually, we can further analyze it. I think that would be enough for the time being.
Question number 2 of 6. This is mindful sitting. Dear Venerable Sir, much merits for your valuable program. I learned the basic techniques of how to establish mindfulness during sitting, walking, and some day-to-day activities by participating in this forum and trying to build a practice. I get that when Venerable Sir highlighted the practice will build the path and get us to the Noble Eightfold Path, I just wanted to check if there's any right understanding or correct view that we should establish even during the initial phase of the practice. When I reflect on my practice, I try to find the connection to know Four Noble Truths. Thus my question. With metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, having a right view is quite important. Say that is why Buddha mentioned right view as twofold. The first one is very much like a mundane type of right view. Say you first want to become a good person, you want to do the wholesome deeds only, you need to prevent from doing any unwholesome deed. So you are accepting the kamma, what we call as the kammasakata sammaditti. So you are establishing yourself on the proper ground. So you need to stop as much as possible the wrongdoings. And you need to do only the correct things, wholesome deeds. And now you accept, okay, there is something called good, something called bad. Something wholesome, something unwholesome. So this is that extent we can say it is samadhi. But later there are various other versions of samadhi. Say you go a little deeper. Say someone having some understanding about different nutrients. That is also samadhi. yesterday actually I discussed this with another program. So Buddha explained the Dhamma through four nutriments. Kabalinkara ahara, passa ahara, sanchetana, mano sanchetana ahara, vinyana ahara. So likewise, so if one has that kind of an understanding, that is also samadhitti. So likewise, samadhitti have different aspects. So you can have some understanding about samadhitti and you need to get on to the practice. Later, the samadhitti also evolves. Now previously what you had is quite a kind of a mundane type of samadhitti. Later you are aiming towards a supramundane type of samadhitti. So that is also Buddha mentioned. Ariya Lokuttara Magganga. So that's a kind of samadhitti which is based on kind of a noble supramundane type of samadhitti. So that is where you are trying to develop these spiritual faculties, saddha sati, saddha virya sati samadhi panya, and say you are developing these seven enlightenment factors. So you are more and more into development of those spiritual qualities, not as a person, but you are allowing those processes to happen, the cause and effect relationship to grow. So now getting into the more valuable level of samadhitti. So therefore, first you need to have some amount of samadhitti for you to start, and as we are continuing our practice, so the samadhitti may deepen, grow into other sides.
Question number 3 of 6, mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, during the sitting practice, when the breath becomes subtle and fade away, I get uneasy and unsettled. I can observe this even after a few years of practice when it happens without any pre-planning and preparation. This does not happen if I have the initial preparation that the fading away breath is a step in the progress of the practice and the accepting attitude, keeping a smile on my face while observing it. Due to this double standard of the mind, I tend to think that at a deeper level, accepting calming down of the breath can be a fake or vanchanika dharma, whereas my mind wants to hold to the ever-changing, eventful breath. Is my understanding correct, Bhante? With metta, that's the other question.
Can you repeat the question, Chamila? It's a little interesting question.
Yes, Bhante. Dear Bhante, during the sitting practice, when the breath becomes subtle and fade away, I get uneasy and unsettled. I can observe this even after a few years of practice when it happens without any pre-planning and preparation.
Mm-hmm.
This does not happen if I have the initial preparation that the fading away breath is a step in the progress of the practice and accepting right. Attitude, keeping a smile on my face while observing it.
Yeah. So basically, this is true because mind likes to hold on to something. Mind want to hang on to something. So right now what we give is just the breath. So everything else we are trying to minimize, and all the sights, sounds, smells, tastes, so those are not available, and what we are giving for mind to say play with is nothing but the breath. Now at least breath is available for him to hang on to. Now interestingly, the breath also now calms down, becomes subtler and subtler, and ultimately breath disappear. Now mind is in a little troublesome situation, so what's now going to hang on to? What am I going to hold on to? Now as a result of that, a certain kind of agitation can happen. You might feel little threatened, you might feel little agitated. Again, your mind become restless. As you mentioned, you recognize, this is a kind of a natural effect of meditation, it's a result of meditation, so it may happen, nothing to worry. Once it is there, let me be with it. So that is very interesting mentioned by Most Venerable Mathera Sri Jnanarama Mahathero. So he again and again has mentioned, go prepared. That's the lion, go prepared. So you recognize, this is going to happen in the future, but when it happens, okay, I am ready to be with it. I am not going to agitate. I am not going to entertain doubts. I simply can be with it. I can endure that. So when you have that proper attitude, okay, you reach there, mind calms down, breath also calms down, even breath disappears. But since you are familiar with it and you are ready to accept that situation, okay, you can endure that situation. No agitation. So now, is it really a vanchaka dharma? I think probably mind can show it is very much like calm down without real calming down of the breath, just to cheat you. So that could be a little bit of a tricky thing. But on the other hand, if we solely depend on the breath, because now we are closely examining the breath, so we know its behavior. Is it cross? Is it long? Is it short? So we are free from any doubt. Now doubt, vichikicca, is an hindrance. And with proper practice, when we do the close examination, doubt may fade away. Probably you can remember when we were discussing samadhi. So we discussed about five samadhi factors, jhana anga, vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekaggata. So this vichara, examination part, close observation part, closely investigating part is the vichara. So that is completely counteracting with vichikicca. So more you closely examine breath, it can eliminate vichikicca. So therefore, probably for you to avoid any kind of misbehavior of mind, probably you can do this close examination of breath. Then you can be sure, okay, I went through the proper process. At the beginning, there was little restlessness. Okay, now the mind has calmed down. Okay, now I am observing breath. In breath, I have observed. Out breath, I have observed. Okay, in breath is longer. Out breath is shorter. In breath is cooler. Out breath is warmer. So likewise, you go through the each and every step very closely through this proper investigation, and no doubts right now. So whatever happens is quite real. In that sense, it is not mind-made thing. Rather, the breath itself has gone through its evolution properly. It is not that something mind has illusionary put on to the breath. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, we are all fortunate to participate in this type of a practice-oriented program, which is rare today. Due to your kindness and compassion, we learned the techniques of practicing and progressing in the mindfulness path. Based on our experience, this is something which we truly and honestly need to do with a lot of effort and guidance. Nothing will be achieved without practice. My question is about our parents who have never heard of this message and now in their old age. I tried to teach them some form of mindfulness when I met them regularly, but seems it is very difficult or futile exercise. They are much more fond of listening to Dhamma sermons, and the little practice is oriented towards calm and serenity. Their bodies are not supporting investigative practice, nor their mindset. I am now thinking of giving up trying to teach them the message of mindfulness and just to keep them happy with meritorious acts until they die. I hope this is common situation for many of this forum, and appreciate Bhante's advice. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it may be true. Actually, it is even scientifically found that developing mindfulness particularly is quite easy when we are young. So when we are getting older, so it may take long time and it is more difficult. So that is why sometimes our kids, our young generation, if we are taught with proper techniques, so they may develop mindfulness even earlier than us, even earlier than the adults. But as you said, when we are getting more and more older, so it could be a little difficult because our mind is very much like fixed. So a kind of a fixation has happened in the mind. So the mind also very much like clogged. So many fixed views. and very difficult to adjust. And in a way, it is a little sad situation, and very true. I mean, very, very. I mean, we have very kind of different limits in our capacity to help them. So as you said, maybe one option is keep them happy and allow them to recognize or remember whatever the meritorious deeds that they did. And actually, Bhante Dhammajiva gave a very interesting answer here. And probably after the death, next time when they are coming as little kids, they are welcome to Satipasala. So that is the answer that Bhante Dhammajiva used to give. Probably we can say that as well.
Question number 5 of 6. These are also again a general question. Dear Bhante, please explain to me the construction of consciousness. Of the 5 khandhas, consciousness, vinya is described as a magician's trick. Is it consciousness that creates the feeling, misconception, illusion of a self? Does consciousness arise with thought? Example, Descartes quoted, I think, therefore I am. Mm-hmm. Is thought, in a broad sense, one's memory of past occurrences, which keeps changing both by involuntary means and by volition? And is thought also one's imagination, visions, and unfulfilled plans for the future? In that sense, is the sliver of time of the present moment the only reality? Thank you. We are indeed blessed by your explanation of the Dhamma, gifted by your meritorious actions. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah. So one activity of consciousness is to distinguish. So when there are many things available, so you distinctly know, okay, this is this. So, and that is one function of consciousness. So once it distinctly know about it, then it can establish there because of the craving. Now it is there. Now it is no more here, but it is there. So once it is there, probably I can identify that as a person, as a good thing, as a something. So it has become something. Previously it was nothing, basically. And assume that mind was quite peaceful, happy, or not established, not clinging. So kind of a free state of the mind. But now there are 101 things available, and among them, assume that your mind particularly interested on one thing, and it is selected that thing and established there. Like the marriage has happened. Now there were many girls, many boys. So you selected one and you established there. So consciousness also like that. Say you established there. Now, so you have become someone. You have become something. The mind has become something. So when it has become something, or it has become someone, so that is a kind of an illusionary process. It's a kind of a assuming process. So you assume that you are so and so. You are a person, you are a mother, you are a father, you are a doctor, you are an engineer, you are a lawyer. So we assume that I am so and so. Because mind or the consciousness has established and is growing as something, as someone, and you recognize, identify as something. But it is an illusionary process. It is not something substantial. It's a mind-made thing. So this whole thing is therefore done by consciousness. So therefore it is mentioned it as a kind of a magician. There may be other ways of explaining it. And to this process, actually, thoughts may support, various signs may support, and all these additional components may support. Actually, consciousness either establish on rupa, that is the form, either establish on various feelings, or either establish on various sanya perceptions, or either establish on sankhara, various formations, thoughts, etc. So these other aggregates are really necessary for the consciousness to establish. So they are closely interrelated in that sense. Probably you can remember the Upaya Sutta, Rupa Upayangma Bhikkave Vinyanam Tittamanam Titteya Rupa Rammanam Rupa Patittham. So Buddha mentioned, if mind, the consciousness has to establish, so either it may establish on form, on rupa, or either it may establish on vedana, either may establish on sanya, or either may establish on sankhara. So mind, the consciousness may associate any of these for the establishment. So one of those may be present, maybe as sanya it is more evident, prominent, it is present, or as thoughts it is present. So those are possible. Anyway, consciousness has found the footing. It has found a place to establish. So after establishment, it is growing as a person, as a unique something. So that is where a kind of a magic has happened. Actually, there was nothing, but now there is something. Actually, there was no one, but there is someone right now.
Question number 6 of 6. So this is the last question, and it's a general question. Dear Bhante, I have indeed a strange question. I have been practicing for a while, and I truly notice that things change for the better when you practice. As Lokaswami Nuhansi also advises us, without jumping straight into a problem, leaving it to rest for a while, palvenna or ferment, after a while when I go back, it doesn't have that same effect or less impact. I have even noticed this in the traffic lights when I drive. If I am late and see that all the lights are turning red, I will get into a knot and agitated and try to cut across the other vehicles and change lanes, blame the other family members for getting late, etc. But if I just forget about the traffic and think to myself, I will get there when I get there and handle the consequences and stop getting agitated about the red lights, I slowly realize that the next set of traffic lights are all turning green just when I come, and I am able to pass through without any delay. I don't know if it is actually happening or that in my relaxed mind, I don't realize the time passing between the lights changing and my drive becomes smooth. However, due to this, I have begun to use the practice as a weapon or tool to get rid of problems in my life. If I have a pressing problem, I will somehow make time to practice walking or sitting, even when at work, and things suddenly become easier to handle. However, I feel that this is not correct, and I am cheating the practice. What do you think? Your guidance is always appreciated, and thank you to the organizers for this anonymous form. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I don't think that you are cheating. Rather, when we practice, we can see the situation properly. So when we are not practicing, either we are sort of agitated, either I am angry, I am anxious, I am with lustful thoughts, I am with little anxious thoughts. So now I can't get the proper perspective, I can't find a proper solution. So that further agitates me. Now the situation becomes more aggravated. But with practice, mind calms down, it becomes more peaceful. And you can see different aspects of this problem, aspects of the situation. Say, even when traffic lights are on, you can sing a song and you can ground yourself. You can spend some time on establishing mindfulness on breathing, or likewise, you are effectively using that time rather than getting agitated by the traffic lights. Okay, you are using traffic light as a teacher, as a sign to relax. Because you are driving fast, you are in a fast pace. So now the traffic light, it's a kind of indication, okay, now calm down. Just ground yourself. Establish mindfulness. So that 1 minute, 2 minute, okay, I am establishing mindfulness. So you can use it effectively. So when you have that proper attitude, and the practice itself is giving or promoting that attitude, and you can recognize, many solutions are available. So if you can remember that social emotional learning, SEL, so they are talking about five aspects. So the one result of this mindfulness practice is that fifth factor, that is the proper decision making. So it happens, actually starts with the awareness practice, which is very similar to the mindfulness practice. So the development of the self-awareness, and then understanding your own emotions, and then even understanding someone else's emotions, then building up proper relationships, self-regulation, and maybe at the end you can get the proper decision because you can see the big picture. So that is the result of the practice. So therefore I don't think that you need to consider it as cheating, because whatever the results, whatever the skills that we develop in our practice is valid to use in other places as well, but within the morality, within the moral restraint. That is why the development of mindfulness is possible through a kind of moral conduct. That is how it becomes a sammasati. So you can kill an animal mindfully, but it is not properly supported by the morality. So it is not properly driven by moral conduct. So when your mindfulness practice and moral conduct are properly aligned, okay, you are behaving within that moral code. So you are not harming yourself, you are not harming another person. At the same time, you are practicing mindfulness as well, developing mindfulness as well. So whatever the results that you gain, also you can use within that moral frame. Now you can see sharply, you can recognize a particular solution, you can get a proper decision, you can foresee a kind of a problem or a kind of a danger. So those things are possible, but the morality is also supporting you to properly manage it. Wisdom is also helping you to properly analyze it. So likewise, many other supporting factors are also coming to effect. And therefore, I think you are doing the correct thing. Yeah.
That is the last question, Bhante. And we've just come to the time limit as well. So I think we can end the program today. So first, I would like to thank Bhante for his valuable time and also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, and both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to pass on the merits and thank the participants for joining the program today, for practicing and also submitting their questions. Teruvan saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, teruvan saranai.